Welcome back, everybody. Today we have Kimberly Cunningham on the show, and we are going to talk about hormone replacement therapy and how to get tested. Please enjoy. Welcome to the FastFit podcast, where exercise meets simplicity. I'm Kyle Recchia, CEO of FastFit. We hope you enjoy the show. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back, Kimberly.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man, that first episode was so fun, and I have just been so excited to dive into some more content. And so I think we should just jump right in. We left off the last episode talking about hormone replacement therapy, a little bit about what you do, but I want to go deep there. Menopause, premenopause, is there some sort of menopause?
Andropause.
Andropause.
This is when men lose their testosterone. Uh-huh.
Okay, so this is a thing. So yeah, maybe you could just take it away.
Sure. So let's start with the women. So there is, everybody knows that when you go through puberty, women start menstruating typically once a month. And then sometime around age 50, women go through or become postmenopausal.
Okay.
So I'm going to just go over a couple of definitions. These are medical terms. So premenopause is around age 17 or 18, where she has regular cycles all the way until she's perimenopausal.
Okay.
So let's call it age 18 until 45. So that's considered premenopausal.
Okay.
So she's got regular ovulatory cycles, fertility, all the things. And then around age 45, she becomes perimenopausal.
Okay.
And that by definition is this where hormones can vacillate wildly. I call it the hormone whack-a-mole era. You have no idea what you're going to get on any given day.
And this is what you're playing with at your clinic, so to speak. Right. Yeah.
And then menopause is the moment she has gone 12 months without a period.
Mm.
So menopause is actually a line in the sand. Postmenopause is 1 second later.
Oh.
So we use in the United States interchangeably menopausal and postmenopausal the same. So you'll see a menopausal woman, but that just means she's gone more than 12 months without a period. Okay. So technically menopause is 1 second in her life.
Interesting.
Postmenopause is all the seconds later.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that's the medical terminology, but for just casual conversation, menopausal, postmenopausal, they're the same.
If you were menopausal at 6 months, not your full 12 months, are you technically not menopausal?
Correct.
You're just in that journey?
You're still perimenopausal.
Still perimenopausal.
Because you could still have a period.
Interesting.
And a period is the result of an ovulation that did not get pregnant.
Okay.
So there's lots of women out there every year who say, oh gosh, these symptoms of menopause are awful. I'm bloating, I'm sick in the mornings, my breasts are tender. They're not menopausal, they're pregnant.
Interesting.
They didn't get a period because they threw out one extra egg on month 5 of trying to go through to becoming postmenopausal, and that egg got fertilized.
Okay.
Right.
I'm a little familiar. I've got 4 kids, but
yes.
I'm on the other side.
So a period or a menstrual cycle is 2 weeks after the egg didn't get fertilized.
I see.
Right. Okay. So we want to make sure that in perimenopause, we're also protecting against pregnancy.
Okay.
Yeah, if that's not desired.
And I'm going to bookmark this for later, another episode, but you reminded me in some of our other conversations, we've talked about PCOS and things like that. Maybe we can get into that another time.
I think we should talk about PCOS when we talk about medical weight loss.
Okay, cool.
Those are going to go hand in hand.
Okay, we'll do
that. Yeah, and that'll make a lot more sense. So for medicine and for gynecology, really hormone replacement therapy for women only centered around postmenopause care. Which is, so when you don't ovulate anymore, you don't get a period anymore, that is a deficiency of estrogen, and then by proxy progesterone, because we didn't have an ovulatory process. So when the egg ovulates out of the ovary, that little tiny cyst that's left behind called the corpus luteum, that's where she gets all of her progesterone. So when she stops ovulating, she stops making progesterone.
Okay.
So there's some perimenopausal stuff where the estrogen actually goes too high because it's not opposed by progesterone. So a lot of things we need to manage in that window. But basically, that whole process is just estrogen and progesterone.
Okay.
Menopause or postmenopausal is the complete lack of estrogen and progesterone.
So are you saying the standard practice is to wait till people are through those full 12 months and go, cool, now let's work with you?
Yes.
What
but
is
they forgot
what
there's a third hormone.
Okay.
Testosterone.
Right. So that's the man test. That's the man hormone, yeah?
That's marketing from the 40s and 50s. That is all that is. Actually, testosterone pellets were first for women in the 1930s.
Huh.
Right. So testosterone was for women a long time ago. But then Premarin came out, and that was from pregnant horse estrogen. And so the marketing for that was Premarin, estrogen is for women, and testosterone, androgel, is for men. It's like blue and pink.
Mm-hmm.
Colors don't have genders.
Mm-hmm.
They're just colors. Right. So this marketing stuck. And so we're trying to undo that. Women need about a tenth of the testosterone that men need.
Okay.
Both genders need testosterone. Men need more, women need less. Both genders need estrogen. Women need more and men need less.
And when you say testosterone and estrogen, I hope this isn't too much in the weeds. And so maybe my question will be dumb here, but I used to think of that as just this one number, like high testosterone, good, estrogen, good, but it's more complex, isn't it? Free testosterone or...
Right.
There's a lot going on there, right?
Yes. So let's stick to the hormones first and then we'll get to how to measure them.
Cool.
If that's okay.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to that.
Sounds good.
So women in the United States, now our European, Australian, and Japanese counterparts have different trends and trajectories. We can probably do a whole hour on why, but seems to be the hormone disruptors. It might be the lack of nutrition in our food. Who knows? It might be an undiscovered thing. But there's something in the United States that's definitely worse for our hormones than our counterparts in other areas of the world.
Interesting.
In the United States, women typically lose their testosterone 15 years before menopause.
So 15 years before a standard practice would start to begin for people.
They're not even checking for it.
They're not even talking, having these conversations.
It doesn't have a diagnostic code.
Oh my gosh. And what are the symptoms that are showing up for these people?
They're the same as the symptoms for men. When you lose your testosterone, you lose your muscle mass. Testosterone is the most powerful anti-inflammatory a human makes, or you can give a human endogenously. So without testosterone, everything hurts all the time. And the diseases of inflammation go way up. You see diabetes go up. You see heart disease go up. You see blood pressure go up. You see fat redistribution.
And you're talking about around 35?
Women in the United States typically start to lose their testosterone very rapidly around age 35.
Whoa.
Some of them even earlier.
Whoa.
So without testosterone, she has no muscle. Everything hurts. It's also an independent risk factor for depression and anxiety and no libido. So everything goes south without testosterone. And in the United States, most providers don't ever check a testosterone. And if they did, it wouldn't be for 15 more years. So women need hormones and they need them replaced whenever they're low. So in my practice, we start checking women around age 35. Whether or not they need it is fine, but we want to start. Remember we talked about in the previous episode?
Yeah.
It's always better to prevent the mess than clean it up.
Yeah.
So as hormones start to fall, there are other hormones that are important, like vitamin D, thyroid hormones. These are all functional wellness and longevity hormones. We want to make sure that we're measuring every year and that we replace when it's lost. Now let's talk about how to measure.
Okay.
So there's something.
And sorry, I want to clarify one more thing. At 35, we're talking about testosterone here. Uh-huh. And I've heard on social media, you know, I get on my soapbox sometimes about influencers, but, you know, these people that are...
They're not all bad.
They're not all bad. No. Most of them are great. Yeah. That are in their 35s, they're in perimenopause or whatever the case may be. What you're really talking about here is testosterone specifically and not those other two elements of perimenopause.
We're not going to have estrogen fluctuations and anovulatory months, which is where they don't ovulate, until age 45 and up, unless there's polycystic ovarian syndrome or some other gynecological disorders. Okay. Perimenopause is going to be that estrogen and progesterone out of balance, but we'll have to lump low testosterone into that, even though that's not what the definition means.
Got it. So if you're around 35, 40, and you're starting to see these conversations on perimenopause, really the conversation is on this specific hormone, testosterone.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Great. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Cool.
And so you want to measure it. So we always used to do, when I first started this 11 years ago, we would check a total testosterone. That's all you could get. That's not actually as helpful as sex hormone binding globulin to get to the free testosterone.
Okay.
The body has ways to turn things on, turn things off, dial it up, dial it down, because we're always going for balance. Sex hormone binding globulin does what its name is. It's to inactivate your testosterone.
Okay. It binds it up.
Binds it up.
Okay.
And then there are conditions where it goes lower to release more, and there are conditions where it goes higher to gobble up more, and they're not always intuitive.
And when you say sex hormone binding globulin, is it also other hormones like estrogen?
Can influence the estrogen. Okay. It is way more, has a much higher affinity to bind up testosterone.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So when someone's SHBG is very high, it's all inactive. So they might have a total testosterone that's optimal. Those numbers we'll get into as well, because there's you have to know that labs are typically, when you see that reference range off to the side of the lab, that is what we expect to find.
Okay.
That doesn't mean it's healthy.
In an unhealthy population in the United States.
So I use LabCorp here in Denver, Colorado. For labs to certify and stay a lab, they have to go through this process of recertification every 3 years or 5 years, depending on their governing body that they fall under. There's a few of them in the United States. So they have to test against somebody else's tests.
Okay.
You have to make sure my machines are getting the same results as your machines within a certain percentage. Otherwise, one of the labs is off and then they have to third-party test. And LabCorp in Denver, Colorado uses the community hospital, Denver Health.
Oh.
So if someone's labs fall within what I expect to find in a hospitalized person.
This is the cohort we're using for a normal range.
That's the range you see off to the right.
Oh, man.
That's not helpful. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that range is like 1,000 points. That's really not helpful. It needs to be specific. So total testosterone isn't very helpful because you might have plenty of testosterone in your body, but if your SHBG is sky high, you don't have enough available to do the job.
Okay.
You're still symptomatic of low testosterone.
And the other side of the coin would be true too. If your numbers aren't super high, but your SHBG is low,
so
you're free, could be good.
Exactly.
Okay.
Or when you start to age out of the optimal range and becoming symptomatic, I have to know what that SHBG number is, because if I give you a regular person's dose, I just overdosed you.
Right.
And more is not better. Then we get side effects because all the receptor sites are full. It's going to spill over and do something else, and you're not going to like what it does.
So this is why we the conversation is changing from what is your number to what are these numbers for you specifically, and how do they change over time?
Yes. And then how do I dose you, not anyone, your height and weight?
I see.
I have to dose you specifically.
Can we take a second? And I don't want to make this episode too long. Obviously, we value keeping these nice and quick for our people, but there's so much good stuff here. So for those that are listening to this, and this is somewhat taboo for them, it might be good to sort of just quickly get rid of the old paradigm on these things are, you know, synthetic and they cause cancer and heart attacks and where that came from. And can we get rid of that stuff?
So testosterone replacement therapy does not cause prostate cancer. That's been completely debunked. Dr. Abe Morgenteller, he's a urologist. He actually found the original study that said that testosterone causes prostate cancer. That was actually three humans total.
Oh, what a good sample size.
Were lost to follow-up, and the third one died shortly thereafter being studied. So it was actually an N of zero. And the guy won a Nobel Prize for this, by the way. There has the Traverse trial. There's many, many FDA mandated as well as independent studies for years and years and years and years. Testosterone does not cause prostate cancer. The end.
Okay.
The prostate is completely saturated with anything that testosterone could possibly do to it at a total testosterone level of about 250.
Oh, wow.
Right. So you can have
testosterone. Which is really low.
So if he has prostate cancer and his total testosterone is above 250 and he's symptomatic of low testosterone, I can still give him testosterone.
Because he's already at that 250. It's already saturated.
He's saturated. Yeah. Nothing else is going to happen. Now I can fix the rest of his body.
Interesting.
So Dr. Morgenteller's amazing. If you can ever get him, he's so good. So he could talk a lot more about that because it's his research that's really changed the whole how men can receive testosterone safely. Now, of course, with any medication, you have to dose correctly, check the dose, make sure we're not doing too much, too low, it's just right. And then for women, the Women's Health Initiative study in 2001-2003 that stopped all estrogen and progesterone-based HRT for women has been completely debunked. The FDA has been ripping off the black box warnings. All the estradiol products have no black box warnings on them anymore. So we're clear. But also, if testosterone caused prostate cancer, 17-year-old boys would get prostate cancer because it's through the roof.
Right.
Also, if estrogen caused breast cancer, a normal estrogen during an ovulatory cycle, it's going to peak in like 300 or 400. When a woman is pregnant, it can be as high as 4,000. So if estrogen caused breast cancer, she'd birth a tumor with every baby.
Yeah.
Like that's not, and the more pregnancies you have, the lower your risk of breast cancer.
Hmm.
So clearly the more estrogen you have, it's the withdrawal of the estrogen. The highest risk group for breast cancer is actually early 60s because she's gone 10 years without estrogen. So we can just get rid of all of that, and I can talk until next week if you want about all the data. Hormones are prostate protective, breast protective, bone protective, muscle protective, brain protective. all the things, relationship protective.
Yeah.
Because when there's no libido, there's no sexual activity, you're roommates. Mm-hmm. That's not a sustainable marriage for most people. So when we talk about hormone replacement therapy, we want to make sure that we're checking women about age 35 for testosterone, okay, that we are doing so on a total and a free, and that those labs are done via liquid chromatography, not immunoassay. So it's very specific kinds of tests as well to get to the molecular weight, because the other ones have about a 40% error swing.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not doing that.
40%.
I'm neurotic. It has to be exact, specific to you and correct.
Yeah.
And then for men, I start checking around age 45. Men in this country tend to lose their hormones about 5 years earlier than their counterparts.
Okay.
Men fare better. I suspect it's the cosmetics.
And what'd you call this?
Andropause.
Andropause.
Where the testosterone falls. I think it's the cosmetics. Mm. So women use a lot more.
It's disrupting stuff, yeah.
There's a lot of phthalates and fragrances and things that are endocrine disruptors.
And so then what do you recommend for that whole journey from 35 to then 45, premenopause?
Well, we're going to keep measuring once a year in my practice. Whatever's missing, we're going to put back.
Okay.
So if it's testosterone,
fine. And we call that supplementation, just like any other kind of supplementation?
That's functional medicine.
Okay.
Yeah. Functional medicine is looking at the systems. If they're not functioning, what's the basic, what's the foundational thing I can do first?
I see.
I don't want to medicate the problem. I want to fix the solution at the base. So that's all functional medicine, and we'll get into that.
Cool.
So we start measuring 35 for women, around 45 for men. I'll check anybody who walks in the door that wants to be checked. That's fine. Mm-hmm. If he's symptomatic, which would be loss of morning erections, mm-hmm, loss of muscle mass, loss of libido, bad cholesterol, and high blood pressure that didn't exist 5 years ago without a significant change. So he didn't put on 50 pounds of fat. He's just kind of slowly getting marshmallowy. Mm-hmm. No matter what he does at the gym, we probably want to check his testosterone. And so he might be 35, he might be 40. Typically, he's 45 in my practice. That's what I see.
Okay. And then before we come kind of full circle back to what we ended the last episode on with muscle here, you mentioned vitamin D as a hormone.
Yes.
Can you speak a little bit more about that?
You have to either synthesize it from sun stimulus on your skin, or you have to take it. But vitamin D behaves like a hormone in the body.
Hmm.
So it turns things on and off.
A hormone being a messenger?
Hormones turn things
on. Communicator? Okay.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah.
Turn things on, turn things off.
Okay.
And that's how vitamin D behaves in the human body. Vitamin D is your mood. It's your sleep. It's mostly important for your immune system. So we see that when a vitamin D is low, asthma gets worse, allergies get worse, any gut issue gets worse. If we can get the vitamin D above 70 in someone with an autoimmune disease or process, we can get that autoimmune disease to go down in incidence, how often, and severity, how bad.
Wow.
By 70%.
Oh my gosh.
It's easy to remember. The numbers match.
And what are the numbers? What's the range? 70 to 100?
We really don't want to go above 100. Above 100 is probably not an issue. Above 120, we might start seeing some side effects. Above 140, we might start losing bone. We need vitamin D for bone density. Too much kind of reverses that process and starts pulling it back out.
Got it. And it's probably the case that most people are low on vitamin D.
85% of the people checked in the United States from infancy are deficient in vitamin D. And here's the thing. You put sunscreen on your face.
Right.
Thinking, oh, I'll get vitamin D through the skin on my arms. Your skin is one organ. Mm-hmm. If your sunscreen has an endocrine disruptor in it, which most do in the United States, especially if it's chemical, not physical, you will not be able to synthesize vitamin D anywhere on your skin for 24 hours. So you're protecting your face from needing Botox, but you're not getting any vitamin D.
Yeah.
Right. So.
What'd you play worse? Wild. Okay, so.
So check your hormones.
Start checking these hormones, right? You're getting these people in your clinics balanced, and this whole experience, I imagine, for premenopause and menopause and postmenopause and all that kind of stuff is wildly different, I have to imagine, than the average person. What does that do for their muscle?
Well, first of all, you can have it.
Yeah, there you go.
So your program is amazing. That eccentric loading and the ability to resist way more weight than you can lift.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best way to build muscle in the shortest amount of time and the safest modality. But without testosterone, you can't respond to the ask. Mm-hmm. Working out is an ask. Mm-hmm. I'm asking the body to give me better muscles. It's an ask. There's no response without testosterone. Mm-hmm. when testosterone falls in a total for women below 30 and in men, it's about 500. Okay. The data is murkier on men, and we have it all in total. We don't have free testosterone data, but that's coming.
That's coming. Good.
We know that when there is not enough testosterone, there is no muscle building. So every time you exercise, you're just breaking down.
Just catabolic.
And you're actually getting fatter or sicker faster than someone at home sitting on their couch. Wow. So that is not what we want. We want, if you're going to go to the gym, if you're going to come to FastFit, if you're going to make the commitment, we want to make sure it's going to work. Mm. Without testosterone, it's like trying to drive your car down the road without any gas in the tank. Mm. So the testosterone is the basics.
Okay.
So you need protein, you need testosterone, and then you need to lift
the right stimulus. Yeah. Okay, I think we wrap this one up this way then, because hormone replacement therapy is pretty regulated, at least today. And so what would you recommend? And there's all kinds of people, right,
that
can go. It's not regulated. No. Okay. But let's say somebody's watching this and they're in Seattle, mm-hmm. and they're in Austin, and they're like, I need to go get this stuff
worked
on.
Kind of find somebody like me. Yeah, if you're not
here. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. What should they be looking out for? I mean, I would recommend they just come to Denver and work with you. Or I think if they're in Florida, you can work with them. Is that right?
Yes. I'm board certified in Florida now as well.
Very cool.
I do not have a practice in Florida.
Got it.
There's a study I'm going to be a part of in 2026. That's why I did my board certification there.
Okay. So, but what would you recommend somebody, what are the things they need to look out for when they start to?
So when you want to find somebody who's good at hormones, mm-hmm. And here's the thing, it's if you're a woman, it's probably not your gynecologist, because the OBGYNs, who are supposed to be the experts in all things hormone for women, spend only 30%, it's actually 31% of the OBGYN residencies in the United States have hormone education at all. And in the ones that
do— How is that
do,
legal?
Uh-huh, and in the ones that do, it's 7 hours or less.
Wow.
Out of all the years.
It's sad.
So when they come to my BioT certification class, it's a 2-day, all-day Friday, and then all-day Saturday. So it's a didactic, and then we have a clinical day. And they've had to do all these videos beforehand to even show up and come to that. They already have 3x what the board-certified OBGYN has. And 100% of their patients, if they live long enough, will need this care.
Right.
So we're working on it. But to start today, you would want somebody who, the company I teach for is called BioT Medical. But a bioidentical hormone certification, there's a few of them out there. BioT is the one that I teach for. There's another one called Eviexis. There's another one. Belmar Pharmacy has one. I believe Anazeo out of Florida have education programs.
Okay.
So you want somebody who is certified in bioidentical or human identical hormone replacement therapy, because that's going to be throughout the adult and geriatric lifespan and what to do. And then the other ones to look for is functional medicine.
Mm.
And that's IFM, A4M. There's different functional medicine certifications. So those are the two things that I would really look for in how to find somebody who knows how to even test for this. And then what are the replacement options, of which there are many ways to get hormones into the body.
And are there resources where somebody in most states can kind of go and look for these
things? I can tell you the BioT one. So it's biotmedical.com.
Okay.
And there's a find a provider button, and you put in your zip code.
Cool.
And then there's all these bubbles around you, and you pick somebody who's close to you.
Okay.
And that's just somebody who's gone through the initial certification. That's part of the program that I teach.
Okay.
Now, that's just the beginning. Whether or not they've continued down the nerdy path that I have, I don't know all of them.
Right.
So, you know, we'll have to see. But it's a good place to start.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's a... And then I do... I have a functional wellness program, and we do have remote health.
Okay.
It gets a little tricky on the testosterone because there's some rules around that one. But if people just want to get started and just want to have my staff's, you know, lens on all of this with a recommendation, we can do that remotely.
Okay, beautiful. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I want to go deeper in our next episode on functional medicine.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked a little bit about that. I've got some experience with working with functional medicine practitioners as well, which most of our members have, if they've been listening to our podcast, are familiar with it, but I'd love to dive deeper on your program and what you'd recommend and even kind of what that means. So
perfect.
We'll do that in the next one.
Sounds good.
All right. See you soon. Thanks for tuning in to the FastFit podcast. We hope you found today's episode inspiring and actionable. If you're ready to take the next step in your fitness journey, visit us at fastfit.com for more resources or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone who could benefit. Together, let's make exercise simple, empowering, and a part of a life well lived. See you next time.